The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Jim O'Neill is the man I'm referring to. He joins us now on the RingCentral phone line. He is a Bloomberg View columnist and, of course, prior to this, a long and stellar career at Goldman Sachs International. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Kathleen. Nice to speak to you. How are you?
Just great. And I must say, perversely, kind of enjoying the emerging market turmoil, certainly from a journalistic standpoint. I don't have to manage money, though. I don't have to advise other people what to do.
Neither do I. I don't have to do that anymore.
So, but it kind of is, you know, it takes us back, doesn't it? I think that's one reason why people are concerned about contagion, even if every logic says, no, this is not the 97-98 Asia economic crisis. What do you see right now? How bad is this? How bad could it get?
Well, to be quite honest, and you and I have known each other a long time, not for the first time, I think there's a complete load of nonsense being said. Let me do a little quiz. Maybe we do a little... Do you get email from your listeners?
Yes.
Okay, so here's a little quiz. At the end of January, what were the three best performing major markets going via the Bloomberg WEI function?
The three best performers at the end of January.
No, so that's not fair.
Well, I'm guessing it was probably some of the markets that are under pressure now, because I think you're going to prove a point, which is maybe this isn't as bad as some people are making it.
Well, shall I tell you the answer?
Yes, please do.
So it's Milan. It's Jakarta, one of the dreaded fragile five. And the Shenzhen Index in China. So there is no major emerging market.
Wait, but what does that prove, Jim? I'm not sure what you're trying to say.
What I'm trying to prove is that a lot of what people are saying about that some big emerging market mess, a la, I don't know, the Asian crisis, I don't think it's really very evidence-based.
Well,
the big story so far of this year, and this is before yesterday, is the negative performance of the U.S. stock market. We came into this year, a really good hedge fund friend of mine, one of the smartest guys and most successful guys I've ever met, sent me an email the first week of January saying, this is interesting, isn't it? 15 sell-side analysts, complete consensus that the U.S. stock market's going up this year. Ever heard of the five-day rule?
Oh, I remember you. We gave you a shout-out on air. Because go ahead, could tell our listeners, because I remember you writing about that.
So S&P goes up first 5 days of the year, virtually guaranteed an up year for the market. If it goes down, 50-50. What happened this year against this huge bullish consensus? It's gone down. And it's also had a really bad January, which has a similar sort of track record. So the real story so far this year in the markets is that, yes, some places in the emerging world, a world of about, I don't know, 170 countries, some have got some real problems.
Sure.
To be described as some kind of emerging market crisis is frankly kind of ridiculous.
Well, I'm not sure that people that are dealing with these countries' currencies would completely agree with you, Jim. And yeah, we're not saying that there's been a
Chinese RMB?
No, that's a safe haven at the moment. So that's not been doing too badly.
The lira's gotten a bit smashed, hasn't it?
It's an emerging market crisis if the currency goes down, but if it goes up, we just ignore it.
I'm not sure that we would say that there's an emerging market crisis. I think we've been saying that there's been turmoil and that it's been spreading a little bit. I mean, the Russian benchmark index, Turkey down 7%. You know, these currencies are definitely weakening and it's pushing the VIX up, you have to say, here in the US as well.
Going back to what I said at the start, Kathleen, the one thing you're guaranteed in finance is turmoil. I mean, things go up and things go down. And I think if you want to make it, link it to something a bit more substantive, the underlying issue for some of these countries is that we live in a world where the importance of the U.S. economy for the world economy has gone down, but the importance of U.S. dollar financial markets for world financial markets has gone up.
Mm.
And there is something badly wrong about that.
Let me just jump in here, though, because I think you're making a very good point. But if it's not a crisis, if people are making way too much of some currencies that have gotten pounded, and we know that traders can go crazy and push the shorts,
Can I just throw in two other controversial examples? Japanese yen fell by 30% last year, Was that a crisis or not?
It's, in fact, they've engineered it. They like to have a weaker yen, but maybe that's the difference. But I would ask you this. Is this a time to look then at emerging markets, at some of these countries, and say, man, there's something that's a good buy here if it's if the stock or the currency's gotten beaten up?
I think you can't think of them all as one. You know, some places, Ukraine, Thailand, probably Argentina, to some extent Turkey, have got some serious issues they've got to deal with. Whether we are close to the end of those in those four places, I think it's hard to say. But I would guess, linked to something else I've learned in my career, never let a crisis go to waste. Usually, the best investments come out of crises. So I suspect out of things that are going on in those places, in those four, where it's probably going to get worse to some degree, possibly a lot, probably really good to be thinking about investing. Insofar as there's been all this chatter about emerging market problems, and I think I saw the latest weekly retail flows showing a massive outflow, that does suggest to me that more opportunistically, we probably are closer to a good opportunity to buying some of these things rather than joining the panic.
So, Jim, let me ask you, is it fair to say that central bank moves in some of these countries, like, for example, Turkey, India, the devaluation of the peso, that stemmed the worst of the sell-off?
Well, as I said earlier, I think you've got to look very specifically. These are all specific issues in these countries. I think in India's case, you know, they sort of have dealt with their biggest problems some time ago. And I have to say in that regard, appointing Rajan as central bank governor, and the subsequent adoption of inflation targeting is a huge positive, something I've been calling on the Indians to do for nearly 10 years. So, you know, their issue is completely different than the one facing Turkey, as is the one facing Argentina. So it's very difficult to generalize. I can't imagine, and I don't follow it that closely, I hasten to add, that Argentina's problems are close to an end. But from a global perspective, you know, Argentina's tiny.
Yes, and it seems to have been in trouble. But how about Mexico, Jim? If I'm not mistaken, recently you were quoted as remaining pretty positive on Mexico. This may not be a crisis, but it, as often happens in markets, you know, if you're going to sell some one currency, you sell another one and see if it works. So Mexico's gotten a little bit beaten up in here. Mexico, yeah. A good time to buy?
Well, there's another underlying common issue. I smiled to myself when whoever was describing my CV. As you would know, Kathleen, most of my, you know, I had a life before being Mr. Brick, and it was the foreign exchange markets that I kind of, I know nothing about it, but I know more than most people, which might not mean anything either way. But, you know, there's an underlying common issue, which of course is Fed tapering. And again, for all this nonsense about EM being so vulnerable, UK 10-year gilt yields have doubled since last May, when the Fed first started talking about tapering. So you can't, going back to what I said earlier, you can't escape that. We live in a world where the US dollar financial system is just far too dominant relative to the US economy's declining importance.
And so why is that happening?
Direction of,
why is that happening, Jim? Why has it gotten so dominant, in your view, disproportionately dominant relative to the world financial system?
Because I think, and this is a problem that other countries have got to get more adult about, they haven't opened their financial markets and developed the depth of them in line with the importance of their economies. And the only way for us to change this imbalanced situation is for that to happen, which of course isn't going to happen overnight. And in fact, I slightly fear that because of the perception about all of these things, some countries are probably more likely to put on capital controls because they think it's the only way to stop this vulnerability. But you can't have it both ways. Everybody seemed perfectly happy when the Fed was easing for the previous decade. And, of course, it made capital inflows easy. Mm-hmm. But when the opposite is happening, of course, the money starts to withdraw. But I've seen that hymn book played through many times in my career. And it's most problematic for emerging economies because it's sort of escalator, elevator kind of theory, but it affects everywhere. It's affecting, as I say, the UK gilt market, never mind anywhere else. But that shouldn't be confused with individual EM countries having genuine problems, some of which have had and some do.
What about its impact on the US dollar then? I mean, we know that China for a long time has sort of hankered after having a reserve currency for the world of its own, but that's not going to happen for a few generations if it ever does.
Well, I think a big, big thing that connects all of these issues together, in my opinion, in the foreseeable future is the IMF's basket, a due revision of the SDR basket at the end of 2015. They have to do it every 5 years. There's a good case if you ignore capital flow, or sorry, reserve currency issues, to actually now include the Chinese RMB. And I think it would be a good idea to do so because it would put pressure on China to open up more. But I think that's a really, really important symbolic moment in terms of changing this dilemma that we're seeing rising in the world. China is now more than half the size of the United States. China's bigger than Germany, France, and Italy put together. And yet we have all these countries around the world who do so much trade with China, more and more, still being so dependent on the U.S. dollar financial system. And, it's not stable.
So, Jim, quick comment. I wish we had, like, another hour with you. But Japan. Elections coming up this weekend. Topics, you know, the Japanese stocks falling pretty sharply. The yen trading at 101.46 right now. What do you see there? Is this working? Is it going to work?
I think last year was easy, in my opinion. The Japan call and the yen call was easy. And of course, it moved so much, particularly because of the external consequences of it. I think it's trickier for them because I think the rest of the world, US and China included, will only accept a further big decline of the yen if it's associated with domestic demand strength. A further big decline of the yen simply gaining market share in exports is just not going to be tolerated as it never was in the past. So to get it from 80 to 105, fine. But taking it to like 120, 130, that's only going to be justifiable if they really create proper domestic demand. And my suspicion is to do that, they're going to have to actually implement some of the things that we all call on emerging economies to do, and that's some proper productivity and structural reforms, not just more QE.
Will the dollar be the outperforming currency this year?
I don't know.
All right.
It will go up and down. How about that?
All right. Well, that's a sign of a smart and honest man. Jim, thanks
so much.
We'll
call you on that if it doesn't
happen. Yes, indeed.
Jim.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2014, Bloomberg LP.